Hello, Rob. It's a pleasure to interview you, and we appreciate your participation in the microscopio. We want to make some questions about the evidence-based laboratory medicine. To begin, what is the evidence-based laboratory medicine?
Hernan, thank you very much for your invitation to get involved with your program. It's a great honor, and so it's my pleasure to speak with you about evidence-based laboratory medicine. So your first question, what is evidence-based laboratory medicine? There's been a great number of definitions for EBLM over the years, but one that I'm particularly fond of comes from Paul Glasziou. Back in 2003, he defined evidence-based lab medicine as a structured strategy to improve the quality of information upon which clinical decisions are based. It's important to note that clinical evidence-based medicine has been around since the early 1990s and really is based on treatment. Whereas evidence-based laboratory medicine has come on the scene relatively recently, and what we are all about from our laboratory results, et cetera, is providing the best possible information for treatment of patients. Evidence-based lab medicine can be conceptualized as a shift from a traditional approach, which depended on intuition, unsystematic clinical observations, pathophysiological rationale, and opinions of authority figures, and now to where we use evidence from actual clinical trials. So evidence-based lab medicine provides tools, and one that I'll mention is the five A's that assist practitioners in the first A is asking the right question. The second A is acquiring the evidence through literature searches. The third would be appraising the evidence using established checklist. The fourth would be applying that evidence to one's local situation, one's local environment, and auditing. And then the last is auditing the results to see if the desired impact has been obtained. What really has brought evidence-based lab medicine to the forefront and what has made it particularly important is the widespread availability of information through computer resources, many of which are free, such as PubMed here in the United States, and so therefore are available without charge so that we can use this in our own offices every day.
Yes, very, very clear. But what is the evidence-based laboratory medicine important?
Well, the importance of evidence-based lab medicine is that it provides a very systematic way of approaching clinically relevant problems. Let's say, for example, a clinician comes and asks you if procalcitonin is a useful test for helping to guide utilization of antibiotics in symptomatic patients. The use of EBLM, of evidence-based lab medicine, would start by asking the question using a straightforward structured approach represented by the acronym PICO. In PICO, the P is for the patient population of interest. Here, for the procalcitonin example, it would be a patient arriving with a fever. I would be for the indication or the test, in this case, procalcitonin. C is for the control or comparison groups, perhaps a group that did not have a procalcitonin test run. And in fact, you can imagine a design where you would randomize between patients getting a procalcitonin result and patients who did not have a procalcitonin test run. And then O would be the outcome of interest. Perhaps days on antibiotic therapy would be one outcome that would be of great interest. So EBLM provides similar tools for searching the literature, acquiring, determining what literature is fit for the question, applying that information to the local situation, and then again assessing if procalcitonin, in our example, has the desired impact.
Okay, and how can the laboratory professional apply the evidence-based laboratory medicine in everyday practice?
How we can apply evidence-based lab medicine in our everyday practice is a critically important question, Hernan. You know, we in the laboratory should get into the habit of converting everyday problems and topics that are interesting to us into focused questions that use that PICO format I just talked about a few moments ago. That is the structure of defining exactly the patient population that is is of interest, the test or indicator, that comparison group, the group that you're going to compare your indicator group with, and then what outcomes are really important to consider. Now, the question format allows you to develop the keywords for acquiring that information. So, for example, we can get keywords out of our question format, so we can then go to our computer, find the literature, then appraise that evidence to see if it is a fit for our question of interest. Then we can apply that information and as I said before, audit just to make sure that it's having the desired effect. You know, it's interesting, the application of the evidence and then auditing it is, of course, up to the individual environment that one is working in.
What is an example of where the evidence-based laboratory medicine can be helpful?
Yeah, I mentioned an example of procalcitonin just a few moments ago, but let's take a different example. Let's look, for example, as B-type natriuretic peptide or BNP. And so let's say we're going to use this test for the workup of the breathless patient, the patient that comes into the emergency department that's short of breath and is suspected of having congestive heart failure. So we would put this into our PICO format. Our patient would be a breathless patient coming into the emergency department. The indicator would be the BNP test. The comparator would be a comparison group that did not have the BNP test. And let's look at, for example, the expense of the stay in the hospital. And that would be, of course, related to how long the patient was actually in the hospital. Now, you know, I'll take a little bit of a different approach here, Hernan, and I'll ask folks to perhaps think about keywords that would come from those from the question here. And so keywords in this example might be BNP. It would be dyspnea, which is a term that means breathlessness. Congestive heart failure would be another keyword. And cost. All of these came from that PICO format we talked about just a minute ago. Now I'll leave it up to the folks to go to PubMed. This is readily available at no cost. Through Google, put in these keywords. Again, they are BNP, dyspnea, congestive heart failure, and cost, and see what literature comes up. I did this just earlier today, and I came up with 26 papers that were available through PubMed, many of them free. And then I would ask the folks to go ahead and look through these titles, look through these abstracts, and determine if there's if any of these papers would be of any use to go through more carefully and save their institution money. I think this will be a powerful example of how evidence-based lab medicine can really help you in your everyday practice.
Yes, very, very clear, very interesting also. Finally, Rob, what do you see in the future of EBLM?
Well, as far as the future of EBLM is concerned, I see it as very bright, but really quite challenging. You know, as we go forward, we're definitely going to go into an environment where there's fewer and fewer resources for us in the laboratory and in medicine overall. I think this is true in the United States, but also in countries throughout the world. And therefore, we're going to have to make the most out of our resources. We're going to have to really be able to determine what tests work, what tests actually improve patient outcomes, and which tests really don't. So I think as we go forward and develop guidelines, evidence-based medicine is going to be a wonderful tool to help come up with these recommendations. You know, folks in the audience and throughout the world, it's going to be so important to participate in this activity. And you know, the problem is that in laboratory medicine, there is a paucity of evidence. There's just not that much evidence out there. And so our reliance on what we call gray literature, or literature that has not necessarily been published in journals, but is available, everybody in their medical centers has this information available to share this on the internet and using different resources that are available. For example, we talk about turnaround time for patients in the intensive care unit. What is the right turnaround time for an important analyte such as potassium? Should it be 30 minutes? Should it be 1 hour? Should it be 90 minutes? Or does it really matter what the turnaround time is, as long as it's somewhere in that 1 hour, 1.5 hour time frame? Well, the only way that we're going to answer that type of question is to get information, get data about outcomes in patients at institutions that may use a 30-minute, 1 hour, or 1 hour and a half. And this is just an example of how we are all going to have to participate in building the body of evidence out there so that patients can benefit, and we can come up with the best practices available in lab medicine and the best guidance available. So actually, there is a program in the U.S. available on the web called Laboratory Medicine Best Practices, which folks on this radio interview may wish to look at. It's available just by Googling CDC Laboratory Medicine Best Practices, and that is a portal upon which folks can enter, people can enter information on various questions that are of interest. Without that input, I'm afraid that laboratory medicine may not have all the appropriate information upon which to make decisions in the future.